Hi Rainmakers, Davinia here, and if you haven't already seen, my brand new book, Cash's Queen, is out now online and in all good bookstores. Cash's Queen was written exclusively for preteen and teenage girls, with a real emphasis on helping the next generation of young women establish positive money habits and achieve full mastery of their finances at an early age. As a mother of two young daughters, Cash's Queen was a real labour of love, and I hope will have a lasting impact on future generations by helping them tackle some of the financial inequalities that continue to plague us as women. Buy it for your daughters, your nieces, your goddaughters, your friends, and even yourselves. Link to find out more and buy your copy is in the show notes. Enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers, those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. Today, I'm over the moon to be reunited with my fave, Candice Brathwaite, not Braithwaite. Candice is an author, broadcaster, activist. Sorry, I should point out she's a Sunday Times best-selling author. That's really important. She's also one of our favourite style icons and all around Insta baddie. I'm sure many of you already follow her. She's also a long-standing Raincheck cheerleader and champion and someone who has followed us from our very earliest days, from right back when we had less than 10 followers. And so it's a real pleasure to be speaking with her today. Candice, thank you so much for being here. I suppose I'd really like to start the conversation by just diving straight in and talking about your own personal relationship with money, because I think obviously this podcast is all about women and wealth. And I think historically and even more recently, this conversation is one that has been shrouded in secrecy, guilt, shame. You know, there are very few women that are happy to speak openly about their own personal wealth for fear of, I don't know, backlash. And you are somebody that's always been so candid about your personal relationship and some of the influences on your money story.
Yeah.
Can you describe that for us today?
Sure. And I think the easiest way to do that is to start from the beginning. So I was raised by my maternal grandfather. He was mugged really badly shortly before I was born, and he was left blind in one eye and deemed unfit for work. So he never worked again. My nan went out to pay the mortgage. And this was in the late 80s, early 90s. So in my head, I'm for thinking women pay bills and men sweep the floor. You couldn't tell me anything else.
I love that.
And I couldn't understand why everyone else's granddad weren't picking them up from school. I'm like, well, your granddad's rubbish because you can see what mine's about. Like, and then I'm like speaking to my friends and I'm like, and what does your mum do all day? Very warped way of thinking, but that's just how I saw it. Also, every Friday, because I think my nan used to get paid weekly at the time, she'd sit down on this 50-year-old ottoman at the end of her bed, pull out 5 checkbooks, an old school calculator, and divvy up bill paying, and even like give my granddad housekeeping money. I think it was my nan that even opened my first bank account for me. Yes, definitely. And then outside of that, I had one parent who was really not great with money, but then I had another parent who was steadily working their way up through finance at Barclays Bank. He worked at Barclays Bank at the time. So like, that was very opposing. But because I spent more time with the parent that wasn't great with money, I picked up some horrendous money habits. I literally thought credit was free money. I thought that, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter if my credit's horrendous, because in my mind, I was like, I'm never going to have the house or the car anyway. What do I need credit for?
Right.
And so then I arrived at my late teens, early 20s with horrendous credit. And I arrived at the doors of motherhood in debt. And it wasn't the biggest amount of debt, but the reality is any debt is a headache, especially when you're trying to even think about growing wealth or starting a family. And so one of my biggest goals was to crack down on this debt and buy a house. by some, I want to say, you know, by some luck. It's not luck. I think the first thing is intention and will. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this hole, Lord, but take my hand, because we ain't staying here. Do you know what I mean? And the biggest intention was actually, I had this special debt letter drawer where I would hide all of my debt letters. I wouldn't even open them. I knew what a debt collector's number looked like on my phone. I'd just block the numbers. So the first thing I did to set the intention of being debt-free was I opened the drawer. And I opened every single letter and I made a sum of how much I owed. I unblocked all the numbers and I was like, whenever you call, I'm going to make a payment plan. And it started like really small, 20 quid a month, 40 quid a month, but the intention was there. Mm-hmm. And then alongside intention, I started to grow a career that made me larger and larger sums of money. So I was then able to pay the debt off a little bit quicker.
Right.
It was so transformative, the intention, the will, and then the alignment of the money gods, that I got to a place where Bode, my now husband, had taken out a loan for us to be able to move house at one point. And I remember calling him downstairs one day and being like, oh, what's the number for that loan? He was like, why do you want it? And I was like, because I can pay it all off today. And it was like 5 grand. And he was like, you what? I was like, I can absolutely close that off right now. Wow. And I just never forget the look on his face. He was like, what, are you sure? And for me, because I understood how invested we were in growing our family, I was like, locking off debt has to be a group exercise.
Amen.
It can't yeah. be, if you're with a significant other or a partner, it can't just be one person saying they want to clean up their credit and be debt free. Because as we move forward, both our credit reports and history matters, you know?
Absolutely.
And so the plan had always been he would hold down a 9 to 5 whilst I worked out this freelance thing. He would pay our regular bills and I would save for a deposit for a house. And so it just got to a point where the jobs I was doing was out earning him. And we never made that a bone of contention. We were just like, where can these resources go?
Right. So it was a strategy.
Right. So we can arrive at the end goal of home ownership quicker.
Yes.
And then lo and behold, I think it was 2019, we bought our first house. And things have grown so quickly since then. 4 months ago, we sold that and we bought the house we're in now.
And it's been so, honestly, so rewarding, because you know you're living vicariously through other people all the time. And you give us these little, you know, these sexy little peeks into what's happening in the evolution. And I can't imagine there is anyone other than the bad mind. I can't imagine there is anyone that is watching this unfold and who doesn't just feel lit up to watch somebody. And because of how candid you are, we can see you haven't shied away. Of course, you're not telling us all your personal business, but you haven't shied away from saying, these are some of the challenges I've had to face in getting to this point. You've shared with us the conversations you and Bode have had and, you know, the nature of some of those conversations. And, you know, even as you were speaking, this old time saying just leaps out at me, which is one hand can't clap.
Listen.
So when we're thinking about relationships, and I say it to my sister, some of my younger cousins, when you're thinking about relationships, and particularly as somebody that has been married, been divorced, has children, I understand the significance of not having constructive conversations in your relationships about finance. If you were trying to grow with someone, I'm not talking about those situationships or having an FB or a sideman or whatever. This is a constructive relationship in which you are intending to build with someone. Mm. The money story can't be something that you just shove in a corner and say, oh, you've got your money story and I've got mine.
No, the story has to coexist, to the point that, and I don't see it in my future, so help us God, that I'm always like to him, should we never work out as a couple, my worst nightmare is for my children's money story to change overnight. Not gonna happen. So fix up. Fix up.
Oh my gosh.
They're not moving schools. They're not moving house. No one's going hungry. So we have to be in alignment, because it's not just us anymore. And if we ever want to go our separate ways amicably, it has to be that in the immediate, their lives aren't financially affected by us going, this doesn't work anymore. And in order for that to work, we have to be honest down to the last penny. If not, you're just going to end up in a bag of mess. And you know what? I've seen that mess. I've seen some things in my time, and they are things that, unfortunately, a lot of the things I've seen, it's black women on the boot end of the F3. And that's just made me like really, I wouldn't say like a detective, but I'm just always ready. You know when you're just logical?
I know what you mean.
I'm just logical because I've seen some women lose, not even seen some women. We lost our family home at the cost of my then parents' ex running up debts on that house without their knowledge.
Wow.
Which then meant that in the course of 5 years, we moved houses 9 times. So I've been the victim of what those secrets look like. And I'm like, I don't care how bad it gets. You know, there are some things that will catch me unawares, but it won't be that, because I just think we owe each other that honesty when it comes to money.
Completely agree. I mean, and the one thing that's quite interesting is that when we have these conversations, the guests that I will have on the show, I will quite often ask them, you know, who were the female role models and influences that you have in your life when it comes to your upbringing, when it comes to your money story and all of these sorts of things. But in your case, you have very strong, powerful, really influential male role models in your life. And I wonder whether your relationship with them and how pivotal they were in your upbringing, that is something that has changed almost the tenor of how your money story has unfolded and how you view yourself. Exactly. You know, even as you described as being a small child and being at school and going, where's your grandpa? My grandpa's comes to pick me up from school. Like, where's yours? And feeling that sense of pride as a young woman that the men in my life, they are protective of me. They look after me. They raise me. And I don't see that there is anything wrong in that. In my mind, this is completely normal.
Yeah, definitely. And then my husband is very, very Nigerian. He was born and raised in Nigeria. And whilst his family love me and his friends adore me, I know it took some time for them to get their heads around the fact that I'm not a stay-at-home type character, and that actually, for some reason, one of my biggest gifts is making money. It's not something I think about. It's not something I work hard at. I'm just like, give me the figure, I'll sort it out.
I love that.
My brain is wired. I'm like,
it's like money flows to you.
Mate, You're a money magnet. Give me the number, I'll go get it. And then we can come back and sort the rest out. But what I'm not good at is the emotions that come with being at home all the time. It's just not how I'm wired. And I know for sure that seeing my nan leave at 4:30 every morning for over 10 years lit that match. It's like, you can stay home, but you don't have to, you know? And should you partner with the right suitor, they're not going to want you to stay home. Because everyone is going to want everyone else to play to their strengths. And I think one of the saddest things that I've seen happen to a lot of women is for men to let their egos rule them. And they decide that even though they aren't the biggest earner, they're going to go and be the man. And it costs the entire family.
Right. It destabilizes the unit.
Do you know what I mean? Right now, and I say right now because I accept that life is forever changing. And if I were to have another kid, I'd perhaps dial it back a bit. You never know what would happen. But I accept, and Bode accepts, that right now, it just makes sense for me to be the quote unquote breadwinner. It just does. And at one point when I just had Esme, it made sense for him to go out and make the money. I think a lot of heterosexual couples are running into issues because they're still in those really archaic, entrenched ideas that a woman's place is in the home, and men get really unsettled when they feel like they can't match their partner's income.
You know, I've seen it exactly as you describe. I've seen it in my personal life. I've seen with peers where this simmering resentment, as you say, in heterosexual relationships, but coming from a male partner where perhaps they haven't had an open conversation about whose strengths, you know, they need to be leaning into and just assuming that if I go off and have a child, then that will mean that I will necessarily have to take a back seat in my career. And the implications of that, particularly over a long-term period, because it's like breadcrumbs that are being dropped, you know, year after year, month after month. You don't feel it straight away. You know, you're besotted with this child, you know, many of us, although not all, straight away, it takes some time. You're fully in baby mode, but then it's year three, year four, year five, perhaps year 10 when you realise, gosh, the accumulated cost of me having taken a back seat in my career, a career that I loved and had invested in, and now I'm trying to get back into it in the way that I would like, I'm now struggling to do so. And then all of that bottled up emotion and feeling that you then have nowhere to channel except towards one another, and how that destabilizes relationships. I feel like you've liberated, just in that, in saying that, you've liberated so many women from their own minds, particularly even from the point of view of saying, my strength is making money. I wonder how many women will be listening and will be saying, that's really what I'm good at too, but I don't want to say it because it makes my man feel bad. And it's important that we empower ourselves to be like, babes, actually, this really is what I'm good at. I can't do that other stuff. We'll have to pay people for that other stuff, but it's going to get done.
This is it.
But not by me.
And I think for the women listening who know they have said that or want to say it, or their partner's not listening, the reality is that feeling is going to pop down your relationship today or in 10 years. Agreed. I can't even like say that in a soft way. That feeling, if you sit on it, so pull the house down today or do it in 10 years. I know which one I'd rather. Pull the house of cards down today and let's see where we all stand. Because that way, you're not doing the next decade with all of this built up resentment. Do you know what I mean? I'm already in a mindset where I'm like, you know, I don't know if I want to be like speaking to a camera at 50. I'm already, you know, Lord willing, good health. I'm like, so what does life look at 45, 50? And then I speak to Bode about it just so he can be in tune with where I think I'm going to be. And because for all that I've already said, I have to remember every day that I'm really new to this. And I'm the first on both sides of my family to be in the position I am in today. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There is no one up ahead of me who can teach me about safe investments. Not that there are any, but investing in trust. There is no one I can go like, uncle, granddad, auntie, what's the play-by-play? I am the first in line.
You're the leader.
And so I'm having to speak to wealthier friends about financial advisors. Even today, I think it's so funny we're recording today when for 3 hours this morning, Bode and I sat down and sorted out our wills.
Which is amazing. I mean, we need to insert like canned applause here because I know how many rainmakers struggle. It's not an easy thing.
Even the will situation, I pressed for that. And I pressed for that because my dad died when I was 20 and he had a will that wasn't up to date.
Wow.
And Jesus Christ in heaven, that cost me way more than money. Way more than money. I think I'll die trying to explain to people the emotional fractures that has put in my life. And so I just knew we were at a time in our life where I'm like, okay, we've got the life insurance, we've got this, we've got that. And if the worst happens, what happens to this? How is this protected? More to the point, how are the children protected?
How are the children protected?
You know, if mum and dad die in a car accident tomorrow, hopefully it won't happen. The last thing I want them to think about is being homeless or having to leave their schools or leave their friends. How in the immediacy are they protected? And I just feel like there are many prongs to this conversation, especially in the Black community. And I think the first is us understanding that we are worth protecting, or we have things to protect.
We have things to protect.
You know?
Oh my gosh, both of those.
Like,
that we are worth protecting.
You're worth protecting. And no matter how little you think you have things to protect. Even if it's just your children, even if you're looking at your bank account right now and it's in the minus, a will is not just about your money. Who are your kids going to? And when I sat down with this guy, the first thing he asked me, I swear this gave me chills. He said, so what care home would you like your kids to go to? I said, what? What are you saying, bruv? He was like, I lead with that to really punch you into the reality.
Gosh, it punches you in the belly, doesn't it?
That he's like, without a will, the first thing courts do is put your kids in care. He was like, they don't care about any living grandparent, auntie, godparent. If there is no will, the first thing that happens is your kids get put in care, whilst the courts then decide who they think is the best guardian for your child. And he was like, oh yeah, just to put some glitter on top of shit, if you've got multiple children, they don't care about housing them together. They just go where their space. I said, Lord.
Rainmakers, please pause it at this section. Rainmakers with children.
I said, not the kiddie bops. Not, what are you saying? And he was like, he said it scares him how few parents know this. They just believe that if there's a living someone, that
I'd want the kids to go to my sister. How's anybody going to know?
No one.
They
knows.
Have to apply this across the board consistently, no. And so they have English common law that will apply.
So it's not even about money. It's like more than money, it's making sure that in the immediate effect, they're with someone safe and who they love and who they trust. We had this meeting maybe 2 months ago, and the first thing I did through tears was call all my friends. I was like, do you know this? Do you know this? I was like,
yeah.
You know your kid just can't come to me, right? I know we said that to each other, but I can't just take your kid. Like, and then they were all in shock, and so now we're all in a rush to get this on paper.
Yeah.
Because no one had explained it to us. And when you come from a space of lack, and that's not just lack in terms of the coins you have in your hand, but lack of financial education and lack of knowledge, this is what happens.
Yes.
You know? And so I say all that to say I'm learning something new every day.
And the thing is, when it comes to financial education, because I know that there's a lot of chat about, you know, this should be taught in schools. And I don't want to say I'm ambivalent on that subject. I think that there certainly is a place for, you know, financial education has to be formalised.
Yeah.
But I think the education system across the world has so many other things that they're trying to teach children.
Yeah.
Money is an important part of it. But there are so many other things that they're just not going to be able to cover. So we, as the adults around the children, have a responsibility to make sure that we know what's going on, because we can't just pass the responsibility to schools and say, teach my child what to do with money, but we are modelling different behaviours at home.
Exactly.
And we are not seeking advice, and we are not upskilling our own knowledge.
And what I learned, especially through Esme, because Esme spent a period in state schools and she's now in private school. What I'm understanding is that the majority of state schools don't want to teach your kids about money.
No.
That's not the way their world works. They actually desire that imbalance so that in 20, 30 years' time, your child believes in lack and only sees themselves as a worker. So yes. That someone else's kid at Eton only sees abundance and sees themselves as a CEO. And so one thing I'm always telling my friends, no matter what kind of school their kids go to, I'm like, nah, so much of this education has to be at home, because
yes, it does.
State schools are never going to level up on the money talk the way that private schools do. Because like I said, they see that lack of education as beneficial to them in the long run. So yeah. We need to buy
Agreed.
The books and learn the things, because if we don't, especially in Black communities, the gap is just going to get wider and wider.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that is a whole podcast in itself. You already know my thoughts. You know my thoughts on the girls and money. That's one of the reasons we're even chatting today that's brought us together. You know, this book that I've written for young girls, Cash is Queen, which I can't wait for Esme to read.
No, you know what? I've got it and I'm giving it to her in her stocking. And I've got to say the cover is sick. Like when I saw the cover, I was like, yeah.
Honestly, the illustrator understood the assignment,
yes.
Didn't she?
Yes.
I made it quite clear. You already know. Let's not pretend. I don't want anybody to see the book and then see me and go, oh, no. If the book is going to be illustrated, all young girls need to see themselves represented.
Yes.
There is a young woman with a hijab on the front cover of Cash is Queen. It's not a joke. We're covering everyone because we're so excluded from the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And as a minimum, we have to be able to see ourselves represented in this way as part of a conversation around money.
Yes.
And what it means. And so I guess thinking about Esme, and obviously you've got a boy and a girl, so that's interesting because I've got two girls. So there, I suppose it's a two-part question. What are you teaching Esme, who's such, honestly, again, being privy to watching this small child, such a sassy, clever girl,
I know,
grow and become this articulate, beautiful, so good at communicating her thoughts and feelings to you. And you've been so good at teaching us.
Yeah.
I actually am listening to my child.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm not just, you know, dictating to her because I'm her parent. I listen to my child and I don't allow other people to come into our lives and into our home.
Yes.
And to, you know, impose their archaic and traditional ways of being upon my child.
Yes.
So there are a number of things that you've taught us all, and especially me as a mother of daughters.
Yeah.
But I suppose my question is, are you actively teaching her things about money? And how does that manifest itself? Or is she open to the conversation? What sorts of things does she say?
Do you know what? I don't think, and I had this conversation with my best friend the other day, because all of a sudden I've realised RJ can read. And child, I know I didn't teach that boy to read. So I'm just like, right, we're doing something.
I love it when they can read. We're in big trouble when they can read.
I said, what? Like, you can read? Okay. And I said to my friend, I was like, but I didn't teach him how to read. And then we had this conversation about how so much of our children's learning is watching us doing. It's not necessarily sitting down at the table and having this massive conversation. It's through the doing. So Esme's really interested about how we run our business and what is VAT and why do you need to pay the tax like that? She's privy to all of those conversations. When dad gets a new car, he's breaking down the payment plan. She's learning about APR. And what I've noticed about Esme, don't spend her money for joke. Esme,
these children, oh my God, I love them. So frugal. And you're watching them like, no, it's okay.
Like,
buy something.
Esme, don't spend that money for nothing. I'm like, girl. And what I've noticed about that, and this has been really interesting, and I wouldn't say painful, but it does bring up things in me, is that she just lives a life that was so different to mine as 8, 9 years old, that I sometimes have to stop myself from saying things like, you don't know how good you have it. Or, you know, I didn't have this when I was coming up. Because again, that same best friend is like, don't intercept her reality with your pain. Don't do that. Don't do that. The reality is she's in a really comfortable place in her life where worrying about money is not her business. And I know for sure that by 9, I was worrying about money on the behalf of someone else. I knew what it meant to hide from a bailiff. I knew what certain letters looked like, to the point that if I could get to the post first and hide them so I could control the mood in the house, I would say that was a good day. And so in some way, Esme just being abundant in her thoughts.
And carefree.
Carefree. But also remarkably so not spoiled. And I say that with shock because of the job I have. When I tell you deliveries come at least 10 times a day and 9 times out of 10 is for the kids, my garage looks like Hamleys, to the point that when these kids have a birthday party, I say, go in the garage, don't bother me, go in the garage and we will pick up a card on the way. Go and pick a toy. So much rolling abundance, clothes, toys, even food. And I think what I find spectacular about her is there's never any expectation. There's never any desire for more. If anything, she's like, so are we giving these to charity? Whose birthday is coming up? And I'm like, that's how we're discussing money or learning about money.
And it's all around you.
And sharing wealth. And abundance, it's like, do I need this much? No, I don't.
Yes.
You know?
And giving it away doesn't preclude me from having.
That part.
Right?
That part.
And it's that mindset that traps so many of us because we think, well, I don't want to tell my friend about that opportunity in case she gets it and I don't get it. And then I'm going to feel bad because I'm going to be behind. Or, oh, I don't want to give those shoes away because I might want them next year. You know you're not wearing the shoes.
It's borderline sick. I love giving stuff away. And Christmas is coming, so I'm proper in my Oprah phase. I'm like, guys, come round. Stuff still has tags on there in boxes.
Mm. Oh, that's my mom and my gran.
Like, come on.
They'll give away the clothes on their
back. Listen, I'm like, and what I'm finding just naturally is the more you give, I'm like, okay, as fast as I'm giving, the doorbell keeps ringing.
Right? It's like that magic pot of porridge. I'm sure there's a childhood story about a magic pot of porridge that just kept bubbling over. And like, you can't get rid of it quickly, you know.
You can have it. And I never thought, no, actually, I was going to say I never thought I'd be that way. I knew I would be that way because I'd been around black people who had accumulated wealth. And out of fear because of their blackness and how hard it was for them to acquire wealth at that time, they are so tight-fisted, their knuckles are white. And I have watched people's lives end and they lack one of the most important things, which is love and companionship. Because they've
driven everyone away.
And I'm like, I can't vibe with that. And I've seen it a lot in the black community, this idea that I suffered so my kids should suffer.
Yes.
Hate. You know, I'm not in this business of, oh, because I had to sweat and toil, I'm going to withhold things from my children now. What are you saying?
I'm so anti that narrative. It doesn't even make sense. Like, why? So I brought you into the world so that you can suffer too, to prove how you can, like, how you can get out of this escape room.
Like, why are we trying to pass? How can your legacy be suffering? And you know, I had this conversation on TikTok where I was like, guys, help me, because my worry is that Esme won't learn certain skills because she's not experience certain hardships. And so many of the comments were like, mind your business. They were like, life is going to teach Esme different things.
Amen.
At a different time, in a different way. They were like, it's not for you to now develop these scenarios so that she explores tenacity. Or they were like, nah. And one girl, she was 19, she was like, listen, my parents have been really wealthy their whole lives. I've lived in a bubble of privilege. And she was like, my dad just died from a massive heart attack. She was like, let me tell you, life will life outside of this. And even my neighbors next door, they are, I believe they're South Asian, and they are doing that brilliant multi-generational living.
Yes.
A girl who I thought was their...
I admire that so much.
I thought it was their son's sister. It's actually his wife. They're not going to move out until they have a kid. And I always look at that and I think, if there's one thing I'd love to do for my kids, it's that.
Same.
Because I also know the experience of, you know, how can I say this without being sued, but just being encouraged to make it on your own.
Yeah. You make your bed. You know, this idea of you make your bed.
And it's like, I'm just like, oh.
And I've observed this at a distance from other people because, you know, again, growing up Caribbean, my experience has very much been, you know, I was sheltered and shielded from lots of that stuff and very much monocoddled. So it came to the point where, you know, my sister says this to me all the time, Dav, you've been really pampered. Of any of us in the family, my sister was always much more independent. Like, I want to do this, I want to do that. And of course, the obvious rites of passage, I went through them. You know, I wanted to get a job as soon as I had a national insurance number to have my own money. Nobody wanted my money. It wasn't for that. It was because I wanted to go out. So I very much had that experience and upbringing up. And I think the mindset in my family was very much, we really had it hard when we came to this country. We don't want that for you guys. Your only responsibility is to study. That's all we want from you. And I very much took that to heart, which is, this is what I'm going to run with. But you're quite right. There are some of us that have the complete opposite experience, which is, from you, the second you earn a pound, half of that pound is mine. So you can never really get up off onto your feet.
Also, again, I don't want to get sued, even though these things are true, but I have to pick my words carefully. Another thing that I didn't even find out until, and what's interesting, this specific experience didn't happen until we were trying to buy the house I'm in, was also certain people running up debts using my name.
I've heard of this too.
Hey!
Oh my gosh.
So now I speak about it on social, especially TikTok a lot. I'm like, listen, don't ruin your kids' credit. Don't run up the kiddie bub's credit. So literally, I think we were like maybe 4 weeks out from buying this house. Brokers are doing a deep dive. And there's just this invisible debt that they trace back to when someone took out a phone in my name when I was 17.
Oh, wow.
And never paid the bill. And it just got passed on and passed. You know when you're just speechless? I know there are the few that would say, oh, you know, people do what they have to do. I'm just not in alignment with it. No. I'm not. It, because the reality is, another thing I would really love the Black community to become attuned with is how powerful and important credit is. I think we've got too befuddled into believing that cash is king. And it's like, you can have all the money in the world, if your credit ain't in order, certain situations will never see you.
I was going to say, you've already put a ceiling on your own potential wealth accumulation by being upset. You're quite right. We are very much a cash culture within the Black community still. Yeah. And we put so much value, we prize it above all else. And you're quite right, to the detriment of our credit, because as you say, we treat it as something like, okay, well, I'll burn through it. No big deal.
Yeah.
Because we don't understand the implications and what that means for our ability to invest in assets.
Yeah, and I think there's like a generational gap where we're at two different sides of the coin. The younger ones, we will burn through it because no one spoke to us about it. And the elder ones won't touch it with a barge pole.
Yes.
They're like, no, no,
there's no healthy relationship.
Not fighting it. Yeah. I'm just like, guys, we've got to get in the middle here.
That is so, so true.
Yeah. You've got to get in the middle. Like, even if you can afford it up front, just to show that you are good at paying bills on time, put it on the credit card, pay it off on time, you know. And having to like teach myself that, or listen to Bode or speak to wealthier friends about that, I'm like, wow, you rich kids don't use your money at all, do you? You don't use, okay.
Candice, the example that I was using all through lockdown was, you know, when there was no passenger travel, right? There was no air travel. Was Richard Branson using his own money to bail out Virgin?
Like.
And there was all that controversy. And I was looking at it. Anybody that has even a vague understanding of how it all works is looking at the controversy and the backlash in the papers about why should Richard Branson apply for a bailout loan? And it's like, so you want him to use all his liquid assets to what? What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Businesses use leverage.
And this
is
the thing.
No one understands.
And now, like, and I'm going into that space because now I'm seeing myself more as a business than a person who just goes to work for a wage. That's an, oh, sometimes, I'm not going to lie to you, babe. Sometimes I just go to bed early because I'm like, this is too much for one day.
It's a lot. It's a lot as you start to peel back the layers of, hang on, that's how they're doing it. When you're looking at different communities, cultures, ethnicities, and how they're accumulating wealth and the strategy they deploy and how they're passing it forward. And you're like, wow, that's really how they're doing it. Because from an outsider's perspective looking in, you're thinking, wow, they've got millions. They must have millions of cash in the bank. They've got millions of cash, haven't they?
And they don't. Yeah. And what I'm realizing now, especially as someone who has a business and is trying to have more businesses, I actually have less cash in the bank.
Right.
Cash in the bank is just silly now.
It's like dead money. Yeah.
It's dead money. It's it don't mean nothing when we're not going to be able to take out what we put in. Where can we put this so I can even touch a little return?
Precisely.
Like,
oh my gosh. And oh my gosh. So, Candice, I'm very mindful of time because you know what we're like. We could go on for like 3 hours. So, thinking about specifically some of the financial decisions that you've made, and if you had to pinpoint one of your best financial decisions, but also one of your worst financial decisions, what would you say they are?
One of my best financial decisions. One of my best financial decisions, as tumultuous and rocky as things are looking right now, was definitely becoming a homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
I know up and down, especially, and I respect where Gen Zs are coming from because it seems like such an impossibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand what becoming a homeowner has done for my financial confidence, if nothing else.
Yes.
Because for a long time, I declared that home ownership was shut off to me. When Bode and I met, Bode believed in it. And I was like, you better just hunker down for a lifetime of renting. Never gonna happen. So being able to now do that twice in the space of 5 years.
Amen.
I'm like, it has unleashed something in me where I'm like, I can have that. I'm literally so focused on a 6-bedroom brownstone that friends don't even talk to me anymore because I sound so insane. And I'm like, yeah, I know it's listed for $15 million, but we'll find it.
Yeah, that's happening.
You know, it's just given me a confidence to understand that again, make the decision, find the will, the rest will align itself.
Absolutely.
And so for me, buying our first home, best decision, because it's just unlocked something that I think didn't exist before. Worst decision, one of my worst financial decisions, hands down, and I don't think I've ever said this publicly, was not at the time taking my father's widow to court. Worst. And I know some people are like, don't have regrets. I will regret that to my grave. Because like I touched on earlier, it's cost me more than actual money.
Yeah.
It's cost me, in my opinion, my legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes, if I've had a few glasses of wine, I do pull up my dad's house on Zoopla. And I've made a very quiet promise to myself that the second that house is on the market, I'm getting what's mine. And I say it all, I just check once in a bloomy. I'm like, today might be the day. Today might be. I ain't got the deposit, guys. Don't be looking at me like that. But like, I'll find it. I'm like, because so much of my heritage is in those four walls.
Yes.
So much of my children's heritage is in the, and I know it's just a house, but I've not been back in that house since the day he died.
Wow.
And I feel like in some ways I've been robbed. And so I would like to live long enough to get my things back. But if I could rewind time, but I was 20, I was ill-advised, I was grieving.
Gosh, you're a young woman, yeah.
I was a baby, do you know what I mean? I feel like that's the worst decision I made. And so if I get a do-over, I'd like to get that back.
I hear you. Final question. Final question. So we've talked about all sorts of different things. And one of the things that I always say about being a rainmaker is that we have to conceive of our own financial reality and our own wealthy life. So what's one woman's wealth is another woman's absolute horror.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be a wealthy woman to you? Because, you know, as you say, in that example you've just given, the loss of your heritage, your legacy, your father's legacy has cost you more than just money. There is an emotional cost. There are all sorts of costs associated with that. The mental cost that you've carried for this length of time. So we know that our wealth comes from more than just physical cash. But what does it mean to be a wealthy woman to you?
Oh, it's so many things. Right now, again, to speak personally, I've had a rough health year. You know, it's not been like do or die, but there have just been lots of niggles that I have consistently shoved under the carpet health-wise that have all come to like the boil in this last quarter. And it has been absolutely a blessing to just pay doctors.
Yes.
Bleeding too heavily, pay the doctor. Even a tooth that's been annoying me for a couple of years, the waiting list to have it extracted on the NHS is 11 months and it's been infected a few times. And so to be able to be in a financial place to protect my health is the baseline of everything.
Agreed.
Because without that, we can't grow anything else. So for me, it's being wealthy enough to seek immediate great health care, which just feels like an utter privilege to say, and a privilege to understand that I see where, I don't see where our country's going, I see where it is. And I already think the powers that be aren't ready to say it yet, but they know that our NHS doesn't exist in the way we think it does. And that if you aren't of certain
means, true.
This gap is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And so for me to be able to almost invest in my future self by paying for my healthcare is really important to me. So that's one prong. The other prong is for as long as I'm able to give my kids the best education I can. I know and I understand the divide and the conversations around state schools and private schools, but I always come back to the fact that Black kids are starting from a place that so many don't understand. And if I am able to pay to close that gap even a little bit, I will do it.
Yeah.
And no one is ever going to make me feel bad about that decision, because the reality is any Black friends of mine who can afford to send their kids to a better school, I will always encourage and support that, because there's already a huge gap for us in state schools. So it's about giving my kids. And what's interesting, I've noticed with Esme, RJ's just started, so I've not noticed it yet. What I've noticed with Esme, it's not necessarily education as in spelling a word or doing the times tables. It's the network.
Yeah.
It's the dreaming. It's the ambition.
The dreaming. The things that they normalize. I see in my daughters, everything, they it just rolls off them. Things that I'd be like, wow, they're just like...
She's like, yeah. Her mum bought a pig to school for show and tell. I was like, her pig? She was like, yeah, you know they own a farm, so they do stuff like that. And I was just like, oh, okay.
And like, meanwhile, like, you're running and then you're going to talk to your husband like, what did you hear what she said?
I know. I'm like, oh, no, we can't have a party that term. Why not? Because everyone's going skiing in the Alps. So, you know,
And I love it. I'm so here for that. They will not be me going onto the trading floor in these asset management firms and hearing people talking about skiing and going, skiing, why would I pay money to go in the snow?
Like, and to understand that it's actually not for the skiing. Again, it's for the networking.
It's for the network. It's for the après ski.
Mate, I said, wow, okay. So it's education. And I think finally, it just means to me, or what wealthy means to me, is living a life that I know I've deserved, but so often been told I can't have.
Yeah. Yes.
And the majority of people online who see snippets of my life are really supportive, but I know there are the few who are like, oh, she's showing off, this is grotesque. And I'm like... For a dark-skinned black woman who does not in any way lean into European beauty standards, who was born in Black Britain, you're going to see this shit today.
And because every day.
I was never told that I could be in this space or have this bag or create this work. I was always told no, no, no. So to be able to like be planning a life that, in some ways, I always tell people, like, one of my greatest things, hopefully I get there, is going to be to get to heaven and for God to look at his clipboard and be like, well, shit then. Okay, girl. I didn't have all that with you, but well done. Well done. Right? I want to turn up there and for him to be like, no, you really shocked the shit out of me, girl. Okay, okay.
Let's have a conversation.
That's the defining moment. And so much of that, unfortunately, in the multiple capitalist societies we live in, it takes money. It takes access. And so for me, that's what wealth means. It means gaining access.
Mm. Oh my God, that is such a superb way to end this conversation. You know, as I say, we could go on for 2 or 3 hours. Oh my God. And when is the talk show coming? Like, we need Candice on her own talk show, please.
You know Britain ain't ready. You know Britain ain't ready.
I know Britain isn't ready, but New York will be.
No, right.
Just saying. Candice, thank you so, so much. I know people know where to find you on the socials, but is there anything coming up that you want to share with us? Do you want us to check? Because I know, buy the books, obviously, Rainmakers, buy the books.
You know what? Just
seriously.
Just buy the books, just follow me on socials, and then anything that's coming up, you'll know first there. Mm-hmm. But supporting my written work is just like the biggest thing to me. So.
And you write so beautifully.
Thank you.
The one thing that I would say, as somebody that is a new author and who has always harboured a real, like, this dream, you know, all of us writing short stories as small children, I've always harboured a dream. And like you say, just kind of parked it, like, people like me from Birmingham, we're not authors. Like, we write our stories, but we're not authors. So it's such a dream brought to life. And when I read your first book, and now having read the second book, and of course, well, there was the second book, and then there was the third book, which is, of course, fiction, because it was, you know, the nonfiction, now the fiction, and just to see how beautifully you write. And I think it was a really sobering thought for me that, my God, if it wasn't for the power of social, we would never have known this great talent. And it makes me wonder. I know we can talk about the publishing industry and all of the many inequalities there, but I'm like, I am grateful for your voice. Thank you for sharing your gift, because it's a gift. You're an incredible writer.
And thank you for the work you do, because I just think we need to see more Black women, especially like UK or born in the UK.
Yes.
Because I think African-American women, they're light years ahead in this conversation.
They are.
You know, they have no shame. They're telling you what they think they're worth and how they're getting it. But again, this Britishness that seeps into Blackness, where it's like, oh, don't say that. We need to shed that.
We really need to shed it. So thank you. Thank you for championing us. Thank you for being there. I hope Esme loves the book.
Yes, yeah.
And we will be continuing to follow your journey and cheering you on along the way. So thank you, Candice.
Thank you for having me.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck, and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time.